We've seen an increase in cases of rhino poaching in South Africa, particularly the targeting of private game reserves. Just what was a couple of weeks ago, we had rhinos being shot and killed in, I think it was private reserve in the Ceres area, yeah, in the Western Cape. And there's been moves around the world. The discussion of how about we open up the rhino trade? We're not going to end the illicit trade for good. So how about we open it? And then rhinos are bred. Rhinos are dehorned. Those dehorned rhinos then go and is sold to the people who use it. Why they want to use or find particular value in rhino horn, we'll find out soon enough. But there has been research that has shown that consumers in the East, they show a strong preference for wild rhinos. And they don't necessarily believe that horns from semi-wild or farmed rhinos have the same effects, medicinal effects in which they believe. And in fact, a new study addresses this conundrum of whether continue with an all-out ban or is the market opened to form some sort of regulated rhino horn market. But it's found that this, in terms of research done by the University of Copenhagen, is found wouldn't end the black market sale. It would maybe decrease it, but that consumers at the end still prefer wild rhino. Joining me on the line from Copenhagen is researcher Vuhau Namdang. I hope I am pronouncing that correctly. Vu, how are you doing this morning?
Yep, I'm doing well. And thank you for getting me on board these discussions.
How would you like me to pronounce you? Simply just Vu?
Just call me Nam.
Nam. My apologies. Thank you so much. Nam, fascinating research that you have done. And you've essentially had to go undercover. I read in an article that you've in fact had to buy fake Rolexes and hire expensive cars simply to integrate you into the communities in war users and consumers of rhino horn. Why isn't it simply as easy as going up to people in the community and ask, hi, can I do a survey with you? Are you a user of rhino horn? And if so, why?
Do you know that one of the main challenges in interviewing rhino horn consumers about their motivation, their preferences, to address the question of whether we should legalize the international trade in rhino horn is that it's very challenging, very difficult to approach the right consumers. So for previous study, they have only interviewed the general public, but to understand the preference of real rhino consumer is very important to ask the right persons. But the right person, I mean, in Vietnam, the actual consumers of rhino horn, most of them are very senior and very wealthy. So they will never accept to participate in such sensitive interview about their illegal behavior. And that's the reason why it took about 9 months, including me and three research assistants, to identify and interview just 345 actual consumers of rhino horn, including those who are using rhino horn at the time of the study and those who intend to buy rhino horn in the future. But all of them are very senior and they have an average interview income of about more than 10 times higher than the national average. Mm. And that's the reason why you need to get along with them to speak their language. So we borrowed a fancy car and a Rolex when we visit them.
So this isn't working class Vietnamese. These are upper income elites of communities that you've had to integrate yourself with.
Yes, there are more of them very, very wealthy individuals and very seniors. The mean age of our respondent is about 50, and the average income is about more than 10 times higher than the national average. Mm. And those respondents, they will never accept to be interviewed or participate in such surveys. Mm.
So this was essentially an undercover operation, interviewing communities and consumers of rhino horn in Vietnam.
So this is not an undercover investigation. It is an academic research. Mm. So we explained to them very clearly about the goal and objective of the study. But to get them involved in our interviews, it is very important to build trust from them. They must trust us and they must like us. So we must have something that could be interesting to them to talk about. For instance, we interviewed many respondents in golf clubs, and we interviewed many respondents in tennis club, and we talk about their hobbies, their interests. I also talk about the interview some antique collector or luxury watch collectors. So I need to equip myself with the basic knowledge of their hobbies and interests so that they found me interesting to talk to.
It's fascinating. But I'd like to know, how would a consumer know the difference between rhino horn that comes from a free-roaming animal and what comes from a rhino that comes from a farm-raised dehorned animal?
The consumers, they have very different perception of how rhinos are farmed. But whenever I talk about rhino from private ranches or private farms in South Africa, they would imagine that though rhinos are farmed like tigers or bears, and the animals are kept in small enclosures and are fed entirely by humans. So that's what they perceive about rhino farming. And this is not something true in South Africa, you know, because intensive management of rhinos is very limited in South Africa. And most of the rhinos in South Africa are fenced, and they only receive a supplement of food in certain period of the year, but consumer perceptions are very different.
Particularly in South Africa, we try to pathologize, but why would someone see value in rhino horn, which is basically the same molecular structure property as something as hair or fingernails? It's keratin. There is this perception that it is used in traditional medicine to reduce hangovers, detoxify the body. That's the general view, but your research is actually finding that the majority of rhino horn is simply being used as art and antiques and to build sculptures and little trinkets. So which sort of tells me the rhino horn is all about status and less about its practical or believed medical uses.
So the consumers in Asia, in China, in Vietnam, they use rhino horn for both purposes. They use rhino horn for both hedonic value and utilitarian values. In China, most of the rhino horn are supplied to the art and antic market, but in Vietnam, the majority of rhino horns are supplied to the traditional medicine market, where people use rhino horn for medicinal purposes, like reducing high fever or detoxifying the body. But they also use rhino horn as a status symbol to show up their wealth.
What then is the educational aspect of informing people that, well, rhino horn, which is simply just keratin, the same stuff that makes your nails and hair, it has no medicinal properties. Is that educational program still ongoing?
There are a lot of behavior trend campaigns going on in China and Vietnam, trying to train the behavior of rhino consumer by saying that rhino is not medicine. But I don't believe that those campaigns will work, or at least in the short term, because the belief in medicinal effects of rhino has been entrenched in the local culture for centuries, and it's very difficult to change the perception and belief in the short term.
I think it's absolutely fascinating. So what does this mean for conservation efforts? If there's this belief that people would see less value in a farmed rhino, which is very much in the conversation now, where people are part of the conservation fraternity are saying, we can't stop the illicit trade, we can't stop the black market, but we can open it up by saying, let's farm, let's dehorn, and then sell that. What is that? But as your research shows, that is consumers aren't being receptive to that. So what then does that mean for conservation? What are the conservation implications? Does this mean that illegal rhino poaching and violent rhino poaching, where the animals are shot and killed, will continue unabated?
We can never expect a complete stopping of the rhino poaching. We can only expect that a legal threat in Vinehorn can reduce poaching. But the extent to which a legal threat can reduce poaching will depend on many factors. And in our recent studies, we use a choice experiment to study consumer preferences and trade-offs with respect to different attributes of the choice to portray Vinehorn. So we ask respondents about to make choices to portray Vinehorn in different scenarios, including the sort of the rhino horn, whether the horn is from a wild or semi-wild or from a farm rhino. We ask them about their preferences for the legality of the rhino horn, whether the horn is from a legal sort or from an illegal sort. We ask them to make choices with different prices of rhino horn. And we also ask them to make choices under different scenario of under the influence of their peer users. For instance, whether they have many peer that had used rhino horn with benefits or not, then we found that the majority of consumers prefer wild over semi-wild, and they prefer semi-wild over farm rhino horns. And in general, they also prefer horn from legal sources over horns from illegal sources. But the problem is that we found that there's a lot of heterogeneity in consumer preferences. We found that about 40% of our respondents, and mostly those with higher income and are in more urgent need of buying, abusing rhino horn, they have very strong preference for wild rhino horn. So it means that if the supply of legal wild semi-wild horn is not enough, and these consumers will likely portray wild or semi-wild rhino horn from illegal sources. So it means that even though we can legalize international trade in Vinehorn, but they will not stop the black market. But it will lead to the parallel operation of two markets, one market for legal products and a second market for illegal products.
Is there a cognizance of a finite rhino population, that if we're looking at a steady decline in the rhino population in Africa, there's something like fewer than 30,000 animals that were left in the year 2020. Is there cognizance that rhino and its horn is a finite resource, or does that simply affect who benefits? It benefits the illicit sale. It benefits the illicit black market and organized crime, that the more finite or as numbers decline, as it is more difficult to source rhino horn, that the illicit economy, that organized crime, can simply just boost their prices, because as your research shown, there is no end in the demand for rhino horn.
One of the possible effects of a legal trade in rhino horn is that if we legalize the international trade in rhino horn, it may remove the stigmas in using rhino horn in major markets like China and Vietnam. And when we remove the stigma from using rhino horn, then demand will increase. But for now, we don't know whether the legal supply of wild, semi-wild rhino horn can meet the potential demand from all the markets, not only from China and Vietnam, but possibly from rising markets from other Asian countries when we legalize international trade in rhino horn.
Nam, we're taking a call now, 021-446-0567. Is it true? Good morning, crew.
Good morning, Lester. Yes, it is true. I spent some time in Vietnam about 3 years ago, and while I was there, I actually had experience with rhino horn. I befriended one of the colleagues at my school, and she was so nice. She invited my husband and I to dinner, and she often took me out to lunch. And one day, she asked me if I would mind doing a PayPal account for her into a South African account. Mm-hmm. And of course, being from South Africa, we are a bit streetwise, more streetwise than I would say, our European friends in this matter. So I asked her what it was for, and she couldn't really give me an answer. And then I asked her who it was for, and she gave me a name. I can't remember the exact name. It was Clement something. And, of course, I Google stalked this person, or Facebook stalked this person, to see who it was. And his profile didn't really show who he was, but he had, like, this hand in front of, like, this kind of wrapper hand in front of his face. So I showed her the picture, and I said to her, Min, why do you want to pay, it was about $100, into this man's account? And then she changed the tune and she said, no, it's actually for free. She doesn't really know what it's for. Mm-hmm. And that afternoon, I went to my husband and I said to him, you know, Min asked me for this favor. And of course, he immediately said, there's no way that we're doing it. But I couldn't figure out what it was for. Mm-hmm. And he then said, Rhino Horn. And, you know, at first I thought it was a joke. And I couldn't imagine that she would ask something like this of me. And then about 3 weeks later, I found out that her mother was terminally ill with cancer. And, of course, I was quite upset about the fact that she would ask something like this from me. But on the other hand, I couldn't help feeling so sorry for this woman, because it's so easy to be judgmental about things like Rhino Horn and the trade. But maybe this makes me a very bad person, but if my mom was terminally ill, I would also I'd also try anything, I guess.
You make a very good point. So she wanted the Rhino Horn, believing it would ease her mother's suffering. Okay, I get your point there. True, thank you so much for the call. Let's talk about the cultural significance and what we put our belief into. Nam, it is something that is not in a South African frame of reference to use Rhino Horn, but they use it in the East because there is a belief, and belief is a very, very strong thing. As you say, education programs are going about the non-medical issues or beliefs that the people have in medicine. But if a community believes in something and they believe that it will bring them luck, it will cure cancer, it gives them a sense of status in their community, it would be very, very difficult. And as you said, it doesn't take weeks, months, or years. It takes generations to undo that belief, isn't it, Nam?
Yeah, but not all consumers believe in the benefits of Rhino Horn. So when, for instance, when we interview about 10 consumers, and five or six of them told me that they really believe in the benefit of Rhino Horn, for instance, in reducing hangover or reducing high fever, but four of them did not believe in the benefit of Rhino Horn. They told me that Rhino Horn has no benefits. So it depends on person to person. And there is a big difference between modern medicine and traditional medicine. For traditional medicine, a consumer in Asia, they believe that it can work on some people, but not on others. So even though Rhino Horn doesn't work on me, it might work on somebody else. That's a problem.
Let's go to a voice note quickly. Someone who's messaging on the voice note line, 0725671567. Let's have a listen.
Hi, Lester and speaker. My name is Leslie. I'm a tour guide and field guide in South Africa. And so I fully believe that we do have to legalize the trade in Rhino Horn, because if you actually look at when the international trade in 08 or 09 was banned, you look at the figures prior to that, which was well below 100, and then within 3 or 4 years after that, we were losing over 1,000 rhino a year. I think it's quite clear that the availability of it definitely affected the price. And, you know, coupled with the fact that the Kruger has stockpiles of it and other places, you know, we could definitely flood the market and reduce the price. And if the price drops low enough, it might actually start not being worth people's while to actually risk their lives getting it. Because going into the bush, especially at night when most of the poaching happens, is incredibly dangerous. That being said, I also don't particularly believe that the people selling it in China and Vietnam are going to be like, oh yeah, this is farmed rhino. No matter where the horn comes from, I'm pretty sure they're going to say it's wild rhino. You know, I just think that if we don't find a short-term solution, we're not going to need a long-term solution. So we need to figure out a way to prolong the life of the rhino we have now. Otherwise, in 10 years' time, we're not going to have any more rhino left in South Africa. And it's incredibly sad that this has come down to this, but we need to do something. And the only short-term solution we currently have is to legalize. Even if it doesn't stop the black market trade, it must lessen it and reduce it to a degree. You know, it's just something that has to happen. And I think people really need to start understanding the economics behind what drives the illegal poaching.
Now, there's been an increasing level of debate around that particular point, using a legal trade as a sort of eco-tourism stimulator. Your thoughts?
It's a thing you can see that there are certain benefits from a legal trade, and our studies have shown that a majority of our respondents showed a positive support attitude and support for a legal trade in rhino hunt. And we also saw that illegal trade will shift consumer preferences from illegal sources to legal sources, even though not all of them will move to legal sources. I mean, there's the preference for why rhino is still very strong, and higher income consumers still willing to pay and willing still prefer and are willing to pay more for rhino horn, even though from illegal sources. So the main question is that whether the legal supply of wine semi-wild rhino horn could be enough to meet the rising market demand. Because it is a question that's been unanswered. And that is one of our main concerns for supporting a legal trade in rhino horn.
In some of your research, you post photographs that are credited to you of cut up rhino horn. Was it easy for you to access? Is it easy just to approach someone or to gain the trust that you've had to do with buying fake Rolexes and hiring costs just to integrate yourself into these high economic groupings? Is it easy simply just to ask someone, do you have any rhino horn to show me, or is there still a guardedness because of a lot of political and police pressure on its sale?
Just the consumer are fully aware of the illegal nature of using rhino horn, so they are very concerned when we ask for an interview, and they have a very precarious approach. So for us, it was very challenging to identify and to interview them. But you know that more of the consumers, they are very senior and very wealthy, and they know how to mitigate the legal sense and the risk from using rhino horns. I mean, they are fully aware of the illegal nature, but they know how to mitigate the risk from buying and using rhino horn.
And is the... What then is the police doing in Vietnam? It is illegal, as you say, to have rhino horn in your position. Are Vietnamese police making the arrests? Are customs officials at ports of entry searching and making publicized arrests and busts of what are essentially international organized crime groupings to deter the sale and transport of rhino horn to a country like Vietnam?
I believe that the Vietnamese police are making a lot of effort in stopping the illegal trade in rhino horn, but the trade is very complicated, and their efforts have not been enough to stop the trade. And so far, all prosecutions of the illegal trade and purchase of rhino horn only focus on the large traders. So they have only caused and prosecuted large traders of rhino horn, but the kingpin behind the organized crime, the end consumer, have never been prosecuted. And so far, no consumer, no buyers or user of rhino horn have been caught and prosecuted. And that's a problem. And consumers, they know that. They know that it's only risky if they trade in large quantity of rhino horn, but it's not risky if they only trade and use small pieces.
there's a few messages in to this effect, and it's a controversial strategy which I don't necessarily agree with, but some on the fringe in South Africa say deliberately poison rhino horn, dehorn, deliberately poison and let that get sent out into the market. I think it's an unethical approach. But your response to people who want to go to an extreme to prevent rhino poaching, of having these measures, of even poisoning, you know, the end product, so that when people use it in whatever medicinal or personal use, that there is this negative effect. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I'd like your thoughts.
Yeah, the initiative to poison rhino horn so that consumer becomes scared about using rhino horn, I think it seemed to be a very interesting initiative. But in fact, the poisons on the whole, when it drills the rhino horn, it doesn't penetrate into other parts of the rhino, of the horn. So it will not make do any harm to the consumers, and consumers do not care about us. So this initiative is very unlikely to work.
It's fascinating research, and it's research by Vuhonam Dang from the University of Copenhagen.